Between Hikojima and Izaki is the Strait of Ondo. You've probably heard of it. To the west, then, that must be Dairi no Ura in Buzen Province. That's right. I remember now. The inlets and islands around here were where Yoshitsune won the last battle against the Heike. Sasuke was growing more nervous with each stroke of the skull. He had broken out in a cold sweat. His heart was palpitating. It seemed eerie to be talking about inconsequential matters. How could a man going into battle be so calm? It would be a fight to the death, no question about that. Would he be taking a passenger back to the mainland later, or a cruelly maimed corpse? There was no way of knowing. Musashi, thought Sasuke, was like a white cloud floating across the sky. This was not a pose on Musashi's part, for in fact, he was thinking of nothing at all. He was, if anything, a little bored. He looked over the side of the boat at the swirling blue water. It was deep here, infinitely deep, and alive with what seemed to be eternal life. But water had no fixed, determined form. Was it not because man had a fixed, determined form that he cannot possess eternal life? Does not true life begin only when tangible form has been lost? To Musashi's eyes, life and death seemed like so much froth. He felt goose pimples on his skin, not from the cold water, but because his body felt a premonition. Though his mind had risen above life and death, body and mind were not in accord. When every pore of his body, as well as his mind, forgot, there would remain nothing inside his being but the water and the clouds. They were passing Teshimachi Inlet on Hikojima. Unseen by them were some 40 samurai standing watch on the shore. All were supporters of Ganryu, and most were in the service of the House of Hosoka. In violation of Tadatoshi's orders, they had crossed over to Funashima 2 days earlier. In the event that Ganryu was beaten, they were ready to take revenge. This morning, when Nagaoka Sado, Iwama Kakube and the men assigned to stand guard arrived on Funashima, they discovered this band of samurai, upbraided them severely, and ordered them to go to Hikojima. But since most of the officials were in sympathy with them, they went unpunished. Once they were off Funashima, it was not the officials' responsibility what they did.
"Are you sure it's Musashi?" one of them was saying. "It has to be. Is he alone?"
"He seems to be. He's got a cloak or something around his shoulders. He probably has on light armor and wants to hide it.
Let's go!"
Tensely eager for battle, they piled into their boats and lay in readiness. All were armed with swords, but in the bottom of each boat lay a long lance.
"Musashi is coming!"
The cry was heard around Funashima only moments later. The sound of the waves, the voices of the pines, and the rustling of the bamboo grass blended softly. Since early morning, the little island had had a desolate air, despite the presence of the officials. A white cloud rising from the direction of Nagato grazed past the sun, darkening the tree and bamboo leaves. The cloud passed, and brightness returned. It was a very small island. At the north end was a low hill, covered with pine trees. To the south, the ground was level at a height about half that of the hill until the island dropped off into the shoals. A canopy had been hung between some trees at a considerable distance from the shore. The officials and their attendants waited quietly and inconspicuously, not wishing to give Musashi the impression that they were trying to add to the dignity of the local champion. Now, 2 hours past the appointed time, they were beginning to show their anxiety and resentment. Twice they had sent fast boats out to hurry Musashi on. The lookout from the reef ran up to the officials and said,
"It's him! No doubt about it!"
"Has he really come?"
asked Kakube, rising involuntarily, and by doing so, committing a serious breach of etiquette. As an official witness, he was expected to remain coolly reserved. His excitement was only natural, however, and was shared by others in his party, who also stood up. Realizing his gaffe, Kakube brought himself under control and motioned to the others to sit down again. It was essential that they not allow their personal preference for Ganryu to color their actions or their decision. Kakube glanced toward Ganryu's waiting area. Tatsunosuke had hung a curtain with a gentian crest from several wild peach trees. Next to the curtain was a new wooden bucket with a bamboo-handled ladle. Ganryu, impatient after his long wait, had asked for a drink of water and was now resting in the shade of the curtain. Nagaoka Sado's position was beyond Ganryu's and slightly higher. He was surrounded by guards and attendants, Iori at his side. When the lookout arrived with his news, the boy's face, even his lips, turned pale. Sado was seated in formal fashion, straight and motionless. His helmet shifted slightly to his right, as though he were looking at the sleeve of his kimono. In a low voice, he called Iori's name.
"Yes, sir."
Iori bowed to the ground before looking up under Sado's helmet. Unable to control his excitement, he was trembling from head to feet.
"Iori,"
said Sado, looking straight into the boy's eyes,
"watch everything that happens. Don't miss a single thing. Keep in mind that Musashi has laid his life on the line to teach you what you are about to see."
Iori nodded. His eyes sparkled like flames as he fixed his gaze on the reef. The white spray of the waves breaking against it dazzled his eyes. It was about 200 yards away, so it would be impossible for him to see the small movements and the breathing of the fighters. But it was not the technical aspects Sado wanted him to watch. It was the dramatic moment when a samurai enters a life-and-death struggle. This was what would live on in his mind and influence him throughout his life. The waves of grass rose and fell. Greenish insects darted hither and thither. A small, delicate butterfly moved from one blade of grass to another, then was seen no more.
"He's nearly here," gasped Iori.
Musashi's boat approached the reef slowly. It was almost exactly 10 o'clock. Ganryu stood up and walked unhurriedly down the hillock behind the waiting stations. He bowed to the officials on his right and left and walked quietly through the grass to the shore. The approach to the island was an inlet of sorts, where waves became wavelets, then mere ripples. Musashi could see the bottom through the clear blue water.
"Where should I land?"
asked Sasuke, who had tempered his stroke and was scanning the shore with his eyes.
"Go straight in,"
Musashi threw off the quilted coat.
The bow advanced at a very restrained pace.
Sasuke could not bring himself to stroke with vigor. His arms moved only slightly, exerting little force. The sound of bulbuls was in the air.
"Sasuke."
"Yes, sir."
"It's shallow enough here. There's no need to get too close. You don't want to damage your boat. Besides, it's about time for the tide to turn."
Silently, Sasuke fixed his eyes on a tall, thin pine tree, standing alone. Underneath it, the wind was playing with a brilliant red cloak. Sasuke started to point, but realized that Musashi had already seen his opponent. Keeping his eyes on Ganryu, Musashi took a russet hand towel from his obi, folded it in four lengthwise, and tied it around his wind-blown hair. Then he shifted his short sword to the front of his obi. Taking off his long sword, he laid it in the bottom of the boat and covered it with a reed mat. In his right hand, he held the wooden sword he had made from the broken oar.
"This is far enough," he said to Sasuke.
Ahead of them was nearly 200 feet of water. Sasuke took a couple of long strokes with the scull. The boat lurched forward and grounded on a shoal, the keel shuddering as it rose. At that moment, Musashi, his hakama hitched high on both sides, jumped lightly into the sea, landing so lightly he made barely a splash. He strode rapidly toward the waterline, his wooden sword cutting through the spray. 5 steps. 10 steps. Sasuke, abandoning his skull, watched in wonderment, unconscious of where he was, what he was doing. As Gundu streaked away from the pine like a red streamer, his polished scabbard caught the glint of the sun. Sasuke was reminded of a silver fox tail.
Hurry!
The word flashed through his mind, but Gundu was already at the water's edge. Sasuke, sure that Musashi was done for, couldn't bear to watch. He fell face down in the boat, chilled and trembling, hiding his face as if he were the one who might at any moment be split in two.
Musashi!
Gundu planted his feet resolutely in the sand, unwilling to give up an inch. Musashi stopped and stood still, exposed to the water and the wind. A hint of a grin appeared on his face.
Kojiro, he said quietly.
There was an unearthly fierceness in his eyes, a force pulling so irresistibly it threatened to draw Kojiro inexorably into peril and destruction. The waves washed his wooden sword. Gundu's were the eyes that shot fire. A bloodthirsty flame burned in his pupils, like rainbows of fierce intensity, seeking to terrify and debilitate.
Musashi!
No answer.
Musashi!
The sea rumbled ominously in the distance. The tide lapped and murmured at the two men's feet.
You're late again, aren't you? Is that your strategy? As far as I'm concerned, it's a cowardly ploy. It's 2 hours past the appointed time. I was here at 8, just as I promised. I've been waiting.
Musashi did not reply.
You did this at Ichijoji, and before that, at the Rengeoin. Your method seems to be to throw your opponent off by deliberately making him wait. That trick will get you nowhere with Gundu. Now prepare your spirit and come forward bravely, so future generations won't laugh at you. Come ahead and fight, Musashi!
The end of his scabbard rose high behind him as he drew the great drawing pole. With his left hand, he slid the scabbard off and threw it into the water. Waiting just long enough for a wave to strike the reef and retreat, Musashi suddenly said in a quiet voice,
"You've lost, Kojiro."
"What?"
Gundu was shaken to the core.
"The fight's been fought. I say, you've been defeated."
"What are you talking about?"
"If you were going to win, you wouldn't throw your scabbard away. You've cast away your future, your life."
"Words! Nonsense!"
"Too bad, Kojiro. Ready to fall? Do you want to get it over with fast?"
"Come. Come forward, you bastard!"
Musashi's cry and the sound of the water rose to a crescendo together. Stepping into the water, the drawing pole positioned high above his head, Gundu faced Musashi squarely. A line of white foam streaked across the surface as Musashi ran up on shore to Gundu's left. Gundu pursued. Musashi's feet left the water and touched the sand at almost the same instant that Gundu's sword, his whole body, hurtled at him like a flying fish. When Musashi sensed that the drawing pole was coming toward him, his body was still at the end of the motion that had taken him out of the water, leaning slightly forward. He held the wooden sword with both hands, extended out to the right behind him and partially hidden. Satisfied with his position, he half-grunted, an almost noiseless sound that wafted before Gundu's face. The drawing pole had appeared to be on the verge of a downward slice, but it wavered slightly, then stopped. 9 feet away from Musashi, Gundu changed direction by leaping nimbly to the right. The two men stared at each other. Musashi, 2 or 3 paces from the water, had the sea to his back. Gundu was facing him, his sword held high with both hands. Their lives were totally absorbed in deadly combat, and both were free from conscious thought. the scene of the battle was a perfect vacuum. But in the waiting stations and beyond the sound of the waves, countless people held their breath. Above Gunview hovered the prayers and the hopes of those who believed in him and wanted him to live. Above Musashi, the prayers and hopes of others. Of Sado and Iori on the island. Of Otsu and Osugi and Gonnosuke on the beach at Shimonoseki. Of Akemi and Matahachi on their hill in Kokura. All their prayers were directed to heaven. Here, hopes, prayers, and the gods were of no assistance, nor was chance. There was only a vacuum, impersonal and perfectly impartial. Is this vacuum, so difficult of achievement by one who has life, the perfect expression of the mind that has risen above thought and transcended ideas? The two men spoke without speaking. Then to each came the unconscious realization of the other. The pores of their bodies stood out like needles directed at the adversary. Muscles, flesh, nails, hair, even eyebrows, all bodily elements that partake of life, were united into a single force against the enemy, defending the living organism of which they were a part. The mind alone was one with the universe, clear and untroubled, like the reflection of the moon in a pond amidst the ragings of a typhoon. To reach this sublime immobility is the supreme achievement. It seemed like eons, but the interval was in fact short, the time required for the waves to come in and recede half a dozen times. Then a great shout, more than vocal, coming from the depths of being, shattered the instant. It came from Gandyu and was followed immediately by Musashi's shout. The two cries, like angry waves lashing a rocky shore, sent their spirits skyward. The challenger's sword, raised so high that it seemed to threaten the sun, streaked through the air like a rainbow. Musashi threw his left shoulder forward, drew his right foot back, and shifted his upper body into a position half facing his opponent. His wooden sword, held in both hands, swept through the air at the same moment that the tip of the drying pole came down directly before his nose. The breathing of the two combatants grew louder than the sound of the waves. Now the wooden sword was extended at eye level, the drying pole high above its bearer's head. Gandyu had bounded about 10 paces away, where he had the sea to one side. Though he had not succeeded in injuring Musashi in his first attack, he had put himself in a much better position. Had he remained where he was, with the sun reflecting from the water into his eyes, his vision would soon have faltered, then his spirit, and he would have been at Musashi's mercy. With renewed confidence, Gandyu began inching forward, keeping a sharp eye out for a chink in Musashi's defense and stealing his own spirit for a decisive move. Musashi did the unexpected. Instead of proceeding slowly and cautiously, he strode boldly toward Gandyu, his sword projecting before him, ready to thrust into Gandyu's eyes. The artlessness of this approach brought Gandyu to a halt. He almost lost sight of Musashi. The wooden sword rose straight in the air. With one great kick, Musashi leapt high and, folding his legs, reduced his 6-foot frame to 4 feet or less.
Yah!
Gundyu's sword screamed through the space above him. The stroke missed, but the tip of the drying pole cut through Musashi's headband, which went flying through the air. Gandyu mistook it for his opponent's head, and a smile flitted briefly across his face. The next instant, his skull broke like gravel under the blow of Musashi's sword. As Gandyu lay where the sand met the grass, his face betrayed no consciousness of defeat. Blood streamed from his mouth, but his lips formed a smile of triumph.
"Oh no! Gandyu!"
Forgetting himself, Iwama Kakubei jumped up, and with him all his retinue, their faces distorted with shock. Then they saw Nagaoka Sado and Iori, sitting calmly and sedately on their benches. Shamed, they somehow managed to keep from running forward. They tried to regain a degree of composure, but there was no concealing their grief and disillusion. Some swallowed hard, refusing to believe what they had seen, and their minds went blank. In an instant, the island was as quiet and still as it had ever been. Only the rustle of the pines and the swaying grasses mocked the frailty and impermanence of mankind. Musashi was watching a small cloud in the sky. As he did, his soul returned to his body, and it became possible for him to distinguish between the cloud and himself, between his body and the universe. Sasaki Kojiro Gandyu did not return to the world of the living. Lying face down, he still had a grip on his sword. His tenacity was still visible. There was no sign of anguish on his face, nothing but satisfaction at having fought a good fight, not the faintest shadow of regret. The sight of his own headband lying on the ground sent shivers up and down Musashi's spine. Never in his life, he thought, would he meet another opponent like this. A wave of admiration and respect flowed over him. He was grateful to Kojiro for what the man had given him. In strength, in the will to fight, he ranked higher than Musashi, and it was because of this that Musashi had been able to excel himself. What was it that had enabled Musashi to defeat Kojiro? Skill? The help of the gods? While knowing it was neither of these, Musashi was never able to express a reason in words. Certainly, it was something more important than either strength or godly providence. Kojiro had put his confidence in the sword of strength and skill. Musashi trusted in the sword of the spirit. That was the only difference between them. Silently, Musashi walked the 10 paces to Kojiro and knelt beside him. He put his left hand near Kojiro's nostrils and found there was still a trace of breath. "With the right treatment, he may recover," Musashi told himself. And he wanted to believe this, wanted to believe that this most valiant of all adversaries would be spared. But the battle was over. It was time to go. "Farewell," he said, to Kojiro, then to the officials on their benches. Having bowed once to the ground, he ran to the reef and jumped into the boat. There was not a drop of blood on his wooden sword. The tiny craft moved out to sea. Who is to say where? There is no record as to whether Gandyu's supporters on Hikojima attempted to take revenge. People do not give up their loves and hates as long as life lasts. Waves of feeling come and go with the passage of time. Throughout Musashi's lifetime, there were those who resented his victory and criticized his conduct on that day. He rushed away, it was said, because he feared reprisal. He was confused. He even neglected to administer the coup de grâce. The world is always full of the sound of waves. The little fishes, abandoning themselves to the waves, dance and sing and play. But who knows the heart of the sea, 100 feet down? Who knows its depth? This concludes the reading of Musashi by Eiji Yoshikawa. Copyright 1971 by Fumiko Yoshikawa. Copyright 2012 by Eimei Yoshikawa. This book was read by Brian Nishii. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Kodansha USA, Incorporated, and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665.
For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.